So Mound Laboratory began operating here in 1948, but really the history begins before that with the Dayton Project, which was under the Manhattan Project, the U.S. Effort to build the first atomic bomb. Dayton Project was tasked with processing the polonium, which is a radioactive material or radioactive element that would go in the initiators for the atomic bomb. And that polonium was processed here. Dayton Project was spread out all throughout Dayton. And by the end of the war, it was realized that all that work needed to be consolidated, and we needed a very secure site for that. And this area of Miamisburg was chosen for that. The technical building was built as well for that, and that's an underground facility here that would have housed all radioactive materials and the actual processing of the polonium. Mound Laboratory was the first Atomic Energy Commission site to be built. And at that time, they also decided that Mound would assemble the triggers, the initiators as well. So that was really its first job here. And the rest is really history. Since then, Mound continued to prove its research capabilities, its production capabilities, and it operated until 2003.
This is quite an addition for Dayton history with all that they offer from the historical perspective here in the Miami Valley.
Yeah, it definitely is. Science isn't really something that we've gotten into much, but I think it's quite exciting, especially with the Cold War context there. It's an area of history that was top secret for a very long time, and now we can share that with the public. Another aspect of Dayton history that really has contributed to the world.
Tell me a little bit about the services that you'll offer visitors to the museum. Can they come in and just walk around on their own? Will you have docents talking about history?
Yeah, so we will be open Wednesday through Saturday, 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and also by appointment. We will offer education programs for school-age kids. Those will all meet Ohio curriculum standards. We will also offer guided tours if you would like, you know, something a little bit more in-depth or maybe a large tour group. But the exhibit itself is meant to be self-guided. It's free admission, so you're welcome to come by anytime you want and peruse our exhibits. And we also have a very large volunteer pool here of former Mound workers through the Mound Science and Energy Museum Association. And they have also offered their services as docents. So you can really get history from those that lived it. So we'll have a little bit of everything.
Can we see some of the highlights?
Yes, let's go ahead. So the exhibit begins with a little bit of back history on the science, the early breakthroughs in science that would have allowed the Manhattan Project to make the first atomic bombs. You know, we have Enrico Fermi and Leo Szilárd. And we have a panel here on the Manhattan Project as well with a very big picture of the very first atomic blast, Trinity Test in New Mexico on July 16th, 1945. And we continue the exhibit with the Dayton Project as well.
These were some top secret efforts taking place.
Yeah, so really a large part of the government didn't even know about those efforts. We had to keep it secret. And then, you know, eventually after the end of World War II, the Atomic Energy Commission is created, which later became the Department of Energy. So now we have a whole cabinet department that's devoted to this work. And even still to this day, a lot of that stuff is kept secret. But yes, initially it was very secretive. So yeah, the Dayton Project here, several sites throughout the city. We have Monsanto's Central Research Department. That came out of the Thomas and Hochwald Laboratory. So those were the two men that had a laboratory here in Dayton. Monsanto later bought it from them, and it became their Central Research Department. This was before Monsanto got into agriculture and other things. And that was kind of the hub, so to speak, of the Dayton Project. And from there, there are other sites, such as the Bone Break Theological Seminary. That was off of West 1st Street. And then later they realized we were running out of space, and Runnymede Playhouse in Oakwood was used for most of the polonium purification. And that polonium would be then sent off to be put into the triggers. And that polonium was in the first three atomic tests, or the first three atomic bombs, the Trinity and then Nagasaki and Hiroshima.
This has been a decades-long effort to move this from that type of facility to the museum that you're offering today.
Yeah, what's really interesting, I think, is that this Mound Laboratory site is now the Mound Business Park, ran by Mound Development Corporation, and it really does show the success that these former nuclear sites can be remediated and reused and turned back to the community as an asset. You know, there's several tenants here in the Mound Business Park, commercial and industrial, and now there's a museum. And we, since we are on site at the former Mound Laboratory. I think that really puts in context just how large this site was. It was over 300 acres. At its height, it had over 116 structures here. Even though it began with 17, Mound Lab really, really grew to a very large size. And now it's a facility that can offer a lot more back to the community. From what I understand, most of the parcels, if not all, have been transferred either to the city of Miamisburg, to the Mound Development Corporation, or to other community members. DOE owns very little left here. So really, it's been turned back over.
And my understanding was that at the time during the Dayton Project, this actually was quite a self-contained community of workers here.
Yeah, so once construction began here at Mound Lab, the site of Mound Laboratory, in 1946, 1947, by 1948, we had Dayton Project employees moving in. The support buildings were all above ground, and the technical building being the main production. By early 1949, we were already producing polonium and sending that off in the triggers. So it was really quick turnaround there to build, I mean, quite a lot of structures. The technical building itself is quite a massive underground facility. It's got an acre on each floor, a total of 5 stories deep, and 2 tunnel entrances. It's an architectural feat, really. It had its own power plant. It had its own water tower. The technical building could survive at least a month in case of any kind of attack or anything. It could survive a month underground with all of its employees. So it was really self-contained. We had a cafeteria here. They had a store, quite like military bases. You know, they're self-contained in and of themselves, and really they were here too.
I can't help but notice, so we're talking about kind of a serious history that took place here, but the design of the museum is a kind of a play on that. We're standing under black lights with kind of a really cool radioactive splatter carpet.
Yeah, that was the intention, to create a whole new experience, really. It's unlike other Dayton history sites in that when you walk in here, you feel, you could feel, now I don't want to necessarily say feel radiation, but yeah, the carpet gives off this glow. It reacts with the black light. We have other items, artifacts here that would react with black lights or glow in the dark. So you'll be able to experience those things as well.
It's a very cool look.
Mm-hmm. So another aspect of this museum, so we are here to educate the public on not just Mound Laboratory history, but also on the Cold War, the context of Mound Lab within the Cold War, and also the science behind all of that. So you'll learn about radioactivity, radiation. You'll get to experience that with one of our interactives here. We actually have small radioactive sources that you'll be able to maneuver and hear the counts. So you can kind of hear that in the background. The counts per minute. This is just the background radiation. So that's all around us. It's natural. It can be kind of a scary phenomenon for some people when they hear the word radiation. But it, you know, without that, we wouldn't have the energy from the sun and life itself. So, but here you'll be able to experience a couple of sources, an alpha, a beta, and a gamma source, and maneuver them over different items like lead, paper, and aluminum to see how different materials will shield that, much like when you put sunscreen on when you go outside in the sun.
So as with all Dayton history exhibits, education is the purpose.
Yes, education is the purpose, and really also to preserve this past. A big part of this project here has been to preserve the very large collection that the Museum Association has dedicated themselves to compiling and preserving that history. We have over 88,000 photographic negatives, quite a lot of 3D objects, and over 5,500 technical documents too, and you know, part of this project is to process all of that and bring those up to professional museum standards so that they are accessible to the public. Polonium production ended in the 60s, and then after that, they got into tritium, which is a radioactive isotope of hydrogen, hydrogen 3. It's the H and the H bomb. So they did a lot of work with either reservoirs that would have been contained in nuclear weapons and other work with tritium to either contain it or make components for nuclear weapons. We also, I think the most interesting thing here is the invention of the RTG, the radioisotope thermoelectric generator, in 1954 by 2 Mound scientists. So it kind of really shows what a think tank kind of place this was. Scientists here were really allowed to use a certain portion of their time dedicated to their own research projects. And because of that, those two scientists were able to invent the RTG, or a nuclear battery. Without that, we wouldn't be able to explore deep space. If you've heard of the Cassini spacecraft, Voyager, Galileo, Ulysses, New Horizons, the list could go on the different spacecraft or satellites or things like that. The RTG is now powering and still powering. We're talking 80 to 100 or more years that these things can last. Voyagers are right now outside of our solar system, and they're still sending back information. They're the furthest man-made object that we've ever sent out in space, and they are still working. So I think that's pretty significant to show that the Dayton region gave us the birth of flight, but it also gave us the birth of flight in space. Really, without that, we couldn't go past the sun's solar power. This was the government's effort to try to use bombs, this here with tritium in it, hydrogen, to move land. So the idea of like building a canal or things like that, we could move large amounts of dirt very quickly. Obviously, that was found to be not the greatest idea. Because, you know, you would get that radiation in the soil. But we have a video of the Sedan test here that you can see. Nowadays, tritium is used to as a glow-in-the-dark material. When you think of tritium keychain lights, gun scopes, we've heard of radium in the past, and we know that that's not quite safe to have. But tritium is. When it reacts with phosphor, it will actually glow in the dark. So this interactive here, you can turn out the light, and then you can actually see an exit sign glow. You can see a watch face or a keychain light. You can find that in a lot of other consumer products now. We have some of those on display over there as well. When you think of your smoke detector that has americium in it, you have low salt, which is potassium chloride, potassium 40. That is naturally radioactive. Uranium glass, so when you think of old depression glass that would kind of has a greenish tint to it, it will react with black light and glow. And those you can still buy.
So quite a history. And again, how important this is as a piece of Dayton history and the story that you continue to tell.
I really do think that people, you know, once they come here, they'll be very surprised that this work happened here. And then really just what the kind of contributions that it gave to not just Dayton and not just Ohio, but really the world. And we kind of have that rich history of innovation, invention, and all of that here in Dayton. And this is really just another aspect of it. But the cool part is that it was top secret for so long, and now we can share it. I know that at least I always find those things really cool. And it's really just an area I think most Daytonians wouldn't necessarily know about, but now you can experience it.
Mandy, thanks so much for your time and the tour.
Thank you for coming.